From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a conversation with Democratic presidential candidate Julian Castro. It's been just 2 years since President Trump took office, and now the presidential race for 2020 is underway.
And that is why I stand here today to declare that I am a candidate for President of the United States of America.
That was Senator Elizabeth Warren officially announcing on February 9th. The Democratic field has quickly gotten pretty crowded. Just to name a few, there's Senator Cory Booker.
We will channel our common pain back into our common purpose. Together, America, we will rise. I'm Cory Booker, and I'm running for President of the United States of America.
Senator Kamala Harris.
I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for President of the United States.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is expected to announce.
I'm filing an exploratory committee for President of the United States tonight.
And Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota just announced as well. But one of the very first to declare his candidacy on January 12th was the former mayor of San Antonio and former HUD secretary under President Barack Obama.
I am a candidate for President of the United States of America.
Julian Castro.
Yo soy candidato para presidente de los Estados Unidos.
Julian Castro is no stranger to Democratic politics. He was a rising star at the 2012 Democratic National Convention, where he was one of the keynote speakers.
Ours is a nation like no other, a place where great journeys can be made in a single generation. No matter who you are or where you come from, the path is always forward.
At one point, it was rumored that perhaps Castro was going to run for president in 2016. Later, he was put on the shortlist of possible vice presidential candidates for Hillary Clinton.
Have you been vetted already as a possible running mate with Hillary Clinton? You know, I was going to ask you that question.
I'm going to leave all of that to the campaign, and I'm not going to get into the parlor game of who's being vetted or not.
Now, he believes that his time has come. So today, we kick off our coverage of the 2020 presidential elections with a conversation with Democratic candidate Julian Castro. Well, you know what, Julian? I mean, this must be really hard on your... I mean, you knew it. You've been campaigning. You've campaigned before. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about your family saying, wow, we're about to maybe not see Dad and my husband for months on end. So how is that going?
Well, that's, you know, you've put your finger on the hardest part of the whole thing. And before I made a decision to run, the part that was the most difficult essentially was what pulled me in the other direction the most, which is that Erica and I have a daughter who's about to turn 10, Karina, and we have a son, Christian, who just turned 4. And so, you know, every day that you lose with them at that young age is meaningful. But you know, through FaceTime and through spending as much time as I can in San Antonio, given what's going to be a very crazy schedule, I'm going to try my best to be a good part of their lives, even in the next year and a half.
All right. So a little bit more political. Julian, the Democratic field, it's going to be crowded, to say the least. But when you look at your path, what is your path to victory in this primary?
Well, you know, it's not a national race. It's a state-by-state race that starts with Iowa. And so my focus for the next year is going to be, especially in those early states, beginning with Iowa. And I believe after having gone there and, you know, throughout the state, I think I can compete well over there and deliver a strong message about my ability to get things done. About my strong positive vision for the future of the country, which I started laying out when I announced on January 12th. And some people have asked, you know, they ask, well, why didn't you run for governor of Texas? Or why didn't you run for senator? You know, my experience is in two places. My experience is at the local level as a mayor, and my experience is at the national level as a federal executive, right, running one of the federal agencies. And that's what a president is. He's a federal executive. And so I actually see my skill set, my experience, as matched to running for president.
What are you going to do to make yourself stand out? Like, what's your thing that you think is going to connect with the people as they begin to hear about your candidacy?
I think a lot. I think my life story. As you know, Maria, I mean, I grew up understanding what it is to struggle in a single-parent household with my mother and with my grandmother in a working-class neighborhood. And I was able, along with my brother Joaquin, to work hard and to get to go to college and law school and to reach my dreams. And, you know, I think that people will see a lot of themselves and their own family in that. I also believe that I have a strong, compelling vision for the future of the country. I laid out on January 12th that in this 21st century that America needs to be the smartest, the healthiest, the fairest, and the most prosperous nation on earth. And, you know, I started to talk about what that includes, everything from investing in universal pre-K education to Medicare for all, to immigration reform, criminal justice reform, raising the minimum wage, addressing climate change. And I'm going to go talk about that vision because I think that Americans want some sense of what you're going to stand for and what they can believe in, not just something to stand against. I believe that Americans are not looking for the hottest head in 2020. I actually think that they want somebody that will inspire them, you know, that yeah, you would consider charismatic, but somebody fundamentally that when they walk into that Oval Office, people are going to feel like, okay, somebody's in command here that knows what they're doing, that has the best interest of the country at heart, that has a plan so that me and my family can succeed, that they're going to do their part in the days to come. And I think that I'm going to be that candidate.
I know that you're saying people want the opposite of Donald Trump, but the opposite of Donald Trump may be being more radical from a Democratic kind of left place. Do you still think that being a moderate Democrat is a strategy to win in 2020? And if not, then is it about being more radical and actually using that term?
I mean, I guess I would just say that it's weird because, you know, in some of the articles, they refer to me as a moderate Democrat. And in other articles, I'm referred to as progressive. Like, I consider myself progressive. And I believe that we need to go in a progressive direction in this country. I think sometimes with me, what people are responding to is that my tone, and now I mean this, like, you know, my voice, my tone, the way that I approach stuff, doesn't seem, you know, doesn't sound like it's way out there. If people actually listen to the positions that I've taken, I think that they'll see that they're pretty progressive.
So the closest step to that path in the last round was that you were on the short list for possibly being Hillary Clinton's vice presidential candidate. Then you didn't get chosen.
Well, the vice presidential selection process, and I wrote about this in my book, was just probably the weirdest part of American politics because most of the time when you're involved in politics, you know, you're running for something and you're asking the people, the public, for their support. That vice presidential process is odd because, you know, everything is kind of done behind closed doors. That's the nature of it. You're supposed to pretend that you're not even interested in the job in the first
Wait,
place.
You know, I didn't know about that. Wait.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because it's really the discretion of the candidate herself or himself, right, to release their list of people they're considering. And it's like 129 question survey. And then they have teams of people that are investigating your life, basically, to make sure there are no issues. So it's just a weird process. It was interesting. I wasn't necessarily surprised when I wasn't selected. Joaquin and I both did what we could to help Secretary Clinton get elected. I believe that if she had won, that our country would be in a lot better shape, and the Latino community certainly would be in a lot better shape.
So you bring up your brother, Joaquin, a lot. I mean, you are twins. You're identical. I love the fact that you say that you talk to him a lot, you consult with him, you discuss these things. He's actually the chairman of your campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's like and why you made the decision to have your twin brother, who's a member of Congress, the head of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus? It's one more job to run your campaign. Why'd you make that decision?
Well, because he's always been there. He's always been my closest advisor in politics, in addition to growing up, and he was my best friend, you know. And there's nothing better than having somebody that you absolutely trust and that you absolutely know has your back. And then on top of that, who also understands politics and the process, you know, very, very well. I mean, that's what he does also. And so there was just nobody better to serve in that role than Joaquin. I'm very proud of him. The other thing that I was very happy about was that my mother was able to introduce me on January 12th.
I want to introduce to you a son of San Antonio. A son of Texas, the great state of Texas, and a son of the West Side. A son of this country, Julian Castro.
I know that I wouldn't be where I'm at if she had not been a Chicana activist in the Chicano movement of the late 60s and early 70s. And so for her to be able to be there at the age of 71 and to introduce her son, and along with a lot of her friends, her contemporaries from back then, that was very special, you know, not only for her, but also for me.
Do you call yourself a Chicano?
Yeah, I mean, I've, you know, grew up as somebody that was a very proud Chicana. So, yeah, I don't get too hung up on those labels, but yeah, Chicano, Latino, those terms changed over time. And I think when Joaquin and I were growing up in Texas, they still use the word Hispanic a lot. But, you know, Hispanic, Latino, I've never really delved into kind of getting caught up in that whole debate. But I have a tremendous amount of appreciation for all of the sacrifices that my mother and her generation of Chicana and Chicano activists and every other Latino, Latina community that they made so that my generation and then my children's generation could have the opportunities that they do.
Coming up on Latino USA, we talk with Julian Castro about assimilation and, of course, the president, Trump.
First of all, I'm convinced that we're not going to beat Donald Trump by trying to be Donald Trump.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
The U.S. and Iran have been at odds for a long time, and we tend to think it all started with the Iranian Revolution in 1979. But that's not the whole story.
This week on Throughline, we'll take you back to 4 days in 1953 that changed the U.S.-Iran relationship forever. Throughline, where we go back in time
to understand the present.
We're back, and we're going to continue our conversation now with 2020 presidential candidate Julian Castro. Julian, what is it like for you to wake up every day in the United States of America and, you know, you turn on the television, whatever news channel, and you hear this president and the way he talks about your ancestors, my ancestors? And what's your response when you see that coming from the White House?
That he needs to get out of there. That we need to get him out of there as soon as possible. Because he has infected, or at least made worse, the divisions in our country. And I think it's fair to say for some of the youngest minds, the youngest kids in our country, is infecting their perspective about the Latino community or about Muslims or others that he has targeted. And so I think, like a lot of Americans, when he started off his campaign talking about Mexicans, you know, sending, or Mexico sending rapists and drug runners to the country and not the best people, you know, I was infuriated because my grandmother came across the border when she was 7 years old as an orphan. And she worked hard as a maid, a cook, and a babysitter. She never got an education because they took her out of school when she was in fourth grade or third grade. But she raised my mother as a single parent, and my mom was able to go to high school and then eventually go on to college. And my mom raised Joaquin and me, and we were able to go on to college and law school and become professionals and serve our community. And I think about all of the sacrifices that people in the Latino community have made. I mean, we have one of the highest rates of people who went to war for this country. And so to hear him pitch the community like that was just infuriating. And then, you know, I'm not putting this in the same category, but the comments by Tom Brokaw that suggested that the Latino community just needed to do better about assimilation.
I also happen to believe that the Hispanics should work harder at assimilation. That's one of the things I've been saying for a long time, you know, that they ought not to be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all of their kids are learning to speak English and that they feel comfortable.
All of that just points to this terrible and tremendous lack of understanding about the Latino community.
When the comments from Tom Brokaw, who many of us grew up watching when there were three networks that basically were leading the news, it was really disappointing. So some have said, well, wait a second, Julian doesn't speak Spanish. Did he assimilate too much? What's your response to that?
Well, my response is, well, first of all, as you know, Maria, it's not 100 or zero. So, you know, I speak Spanish to some extent. I'm just not completely fluent at it. And I understand it pretty well. But to the larger point, I just find it very ironic, and this is something that rubbed me the wrong way about Tom Brokaw's comments. When my grandmother came to the United States, there were storefront windows in Texas that said no Mexicans or dogs allowed. And for her and for my mother, if you spoke Spanish in school, you would get punished, hit with a ruler or spanked or punished some way. So in some ways, they literally were beating the Spanish out of families. Because of that, families made a decision to focus a lot of times on teaching their kids English because they thought that that was the ticket, you know, to make sure that they could get ahead. So it's very ironic that they used to tell our mothers and our grandmothers and, you know, grandfathers and fathers, you're not good enough because you don't speak English well enough. And then they're turning around and telling their grandsons, you're not good enough because you don't speak Spanish well enough. I mean, that is quite an irony. And I think it's a bullshit one.
Whoa, did you just say BS?
I did.
So this president does not play by the rules. You potentially could be debating against him. How do you figure that Julian Castro, who has been raised right by his mom and is a very nice guy, how are you going to go toe-to-toe with someone like Trump?
Well, first of all, I'm convinced that we're not going to beat Donald Trump by trying to be Donald Trump. I don't think that people are looking for the next Donald Trump. I agree with you that, you know, I think the spirit of your question that you have to be able to stand up to him. You know, the Democratic nominee has to be able to stand toe-to-toe and defend their ideas and their record. No doubt about that. But you're never going to out-gutter Donald Trump. And my strategy will not be to go to the gutter with him. I also think that Trump is not what he was in 2016. He has a track record. People have seen so many of his failures now in office. They have something to judge him against.
So where are you on the issue of actual policy regarding immigration? Surprisingly, there is a movement called Abolish ICE, which is kind of extraordinary to see that people are even talking about this. There has been a call to halt all deportations. So where are you?
Oh, I think that we need to go in the other direction from what this administration is doing, that needs to be led by compassion and humanity. Number one, I think that we should end family detention for people who are seeking asylum or refugee status. I believe that we should engage countries like Guatemala and Honduras and Mexico and the rest of Latin America in a way that we have never done before. You know, we engaged Europe post-World War II. We need the equivalent of a Marshall Plan for our engagement with Mexico and Latin America so that both the United States and those countries can mutually benefit, and we can help ensure that all of those desperate mothers and fathers and children who are coming here, knocking on the door of the United States, that they can find safety and they can find greater opportunity in their home country. And as you know, Maria, I mean, the United States in the past has been involved in all manner of things in, you know, Latin America. And so our relationship with a lot of those countries is fraught with a lot of mistrust and, you know, in a good number of cases for good reason. I want to go about changing that. And so one of my big policy ideas or approaches is, you know, to launch an effort like we have never seen to turn around our relationship with those countries. What I believe is that in 2021, that we can have a democratically controlled Senate. And if I'm president, the lesson that I will have taken from the 2009-2010 timeframe is don't wait. We won't wait to put forth good, strong, comprehensive immigration reform.
So I got to tell you, the last thing I would want to be doing right now is running for president. But what's your mindset?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always a certain joy and a certain fun when you haven't been through an experience yet, right? The second time or the third time that you go through something, whether it's a campaign or something else, a lot of times you know what's around the bend. But there's also more of a spirit oftentimes and a fun to the first time that you do something because everything is new. And I've never done this before, but I know that I have a vision for the country that will resonate with Americans of all different backgrounds. And so I'm just going to go out there and try and have fun and try and avoid getting sick as much as possible.
All right. Well, Julian Castro, good luck, and we'll see you on the campaign trail.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Maria.
Julian Castro announced his candidacy for the 2020 presidential elections on January 12th. This episode was produced by Miguel Macias and edited by Sofia Palizacar, with additional help from Julio Ricardo Varela and Maggie Freeling. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with additional editing by Allison McAdam. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our interns are Caroline Aguirre and Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard, be sure you stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. And one more thing, dear podcast listener, take a moment to rate and review Latino USA, because this really helps other listeners to find us. And also, we really, really do love reading all of your comments, so keep them coming. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
I now can tell the difference, so I'm glad that I've been able to get to that point.
Yeah, but can you tell the difference in our voice, Maria? That's the, that's going to be the big test. One day I'm just going to have him get on, and you're going to have to tell the difference.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, we sit down with a Venezuelan father and son, one based in Venezuela, the other based in New York City, to understand how one family is making sense of the rapidly changing situation in their country. That's next time on Latino USA.